slides. The good news, when we get to the age of 65, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands of who's at that stage or beyond, I'm getting alarmingly close to it. When we get to the age of 65, the good news is that if we're men, we have 18 years. Statistically,
yep.
No promises. 18 years left to us. If you're women, we get a little bit of a bonus. 20 and a half years are left to us. One third of the church in Britain is over the age of 65. The not quite so good news is that of those lovely long retirement years, on average for men, 7.5 years we spent limiting chronic illness or disability. And if you're a woman, again, I'm afraid there's a bonus, 9.5 years with limiting chronic illness or disability. What does that mean? Well, it means, particularly in the context of a church that is itself not an elderly bias, that the onset of disability or limiting chronic illness is going to be extremely common. It's going to be an issue for every church. It's reckoned that 95% of us would experience a disabling condition for at least some period in our lives. This isn't about another group of people out there. This is about us, all of us. It's going to impact all of us in our families, in our churches. This is something that is something we need to address. And just taking the field, I work with Torch Trust, the field that I know most about, 100 people a day across the world are told that they're losing their sight and there is no further treatment for them. That's a sort of epidemic, a quiet epidemic. And when somebody comes to us in our church, and this is the question I'd like to leave in the back of our mind, when somebody comes to us in our church situation and says, I've just come back from a clinic for this, that, or the other. I've been told I've got dementia. I've been told I'm losing my sight. I've been told I'm not going to walk again. Whatever. How do we react? What is our pastoral response to that news? Just recently, the charity Scope has started a campaign called End the Awkward. And a quote from the chief executive of Scope. The majority of the people we spoke to said that they would worry about speaking about disability in front of a disabled person. I've now got some helpful message popped up on my screen. We'll dispense with the screen. You know, isn't that right? Do we know what to say to somebody in that situation? Somebody who has just come and told us they have a diagnosis of dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever. Do we know what is appropriate to say, what is appropriate to pray, how to respond pastorally to that? Can the church be the place, the one place, where we can be part of the response, part of the answer for people in our communities, in our congregations, for whom that is the experience?
We live in a society that's highly medicalized. You know, it's almost impossible for, certainly for Western people, to think about health and illness without first thinking about medicine. And it's kind of a strange thing, because most of the healing that goes on in our communities goes on in your family, with your friends, places that aren't within the professional sector. And in relation to dementia, the temptation for us to listen to the big story of dementia, that it's a neurological issue, that it's inevitably devastating, or as the Alzheimer's Society put it, it's frightening. all these big stories that seem to explain what dementia is. But of course, the medical and the neurological story is just one story amongst many other stories that we can tell about dementia. There's personal stories, there's social stories, there's family stories, and there's the big theological Christian story that we can tell about the nature of dementia, what it means to be a Christian with dementia, and where God is in the midst of that. And so my hope is that this session and our time together today will help us to both to listen to and create new stories about dementia that really capture it as a fully human experience rather than simply a medical diagnosis. Once we know the neurology of dementia, that's only the beginning of the story. It may not even be the best place to begin. So the thing I want us to think about in terms of today is, how do we understand dementia as Christians? Where do we think God is in the midst of that? And what does that mean for the way in which we practice? And the answer, at least in part, is God's always in the midst of all things. So therefore, God's always in the midst of dementia and the experience of dementia. The only question is, can we and how can we notice and join in with the things that God does?
I used to work in a mission hospital in Africa, and one of my patients sent me a clay pot, you'll see a picture of it in a minute, which I sent back to England by post, and that was before I had dementia. It arrived in pieces, but having an obstinate nature, I put it together again, and now it's even more precious to me. 2 Corinthians 4 says we carry this precious message around in the unadorned clay pots of our ordinary lives, surrounded, battled by troubles, thrown down, but not destroyed. God hasn't left our side. We're precious to him, no matter what the state of our bodies, brains, or minds, even if in pieces at times. And when I developed dementia and I couldn't remember things and couldn't find my way home from work, didn't recognize my colleagues, it was tough, frightening at first. And each morning I would read these words aloud. Unafraid, I face with joy the morning of each day. Whatever looms ahead of me along the unknown way, my heart will sing God's praises. A mountain can be like dementia, awesome, frightening, challenging, but also beautiful and glorious, and certainly able to reflect God's light, but only if it's exposed to the light. My father also had dementia, but he could still pray to God when he didn't know who I was. Well, I didn't recognize the vicar and couldn't find my way back to my pew after communion because I couldn't remember where I was sitting. I was disturbed by other people's responses. I was a member of the pastoral team, so I gave a talk to help them understand about dementia. They asked to record it, and that was how my website started. So I see my dementia as an unexpected gift from God to help others understand dementia. There's always a reason for everything. Feelings remain when facts are forgotten and familiar patterns continue. It's thrilling to see dementia from a Christian perspective. I get hallucinations, dreadful ones, which shake my sense of reality, but never of God. I can't read easily now, so I listen to the Bible each day. Job knew night terrors. I get these from my medication. Isaiah says, there'll be a highway where no one will get lost. No one, one doesn't know. That would be wonderful for me, I always get lost. In Alzheimer's, amyloid plaques like blobs of chewing gum block the memory pathways in the brain. It's not true that memories are always lost. On the London Underground, if a tunnel is blocked, one doesn't abandon one's journey. You find an alternative route. It might take longer. In the same way, there are different ways to access memories. There are far more interconnections in the brain than on the underground. But if you don't bother to find them, then they will atrophy and die. When I was a GP, I knew about dementia, but it's different from the inside. See the top picture. If I asked you, is it a man playing a saxophone or a woman's face? Two different things, true at the same time. If I asked you, is it a man or a woman? Would you argue about it? Of course you wouldn't. You see, our reality is different often to yours. So why argue about our reality? Because our reality is as real to us as yours is to you. And if I asked you about the red picture, some of you would immediately recognise it was part of a toy train. But others of you would think, I didn't get that. And you would feel uncomfortable, disturbed, upset, because you didn't get it. Well, that's how we feel a lot of the time, because we don't get the big picture anymore. There's always a reason for wondering. And when someone to mention appears to talk rubbish, I call it a word salad, you often don't realise that they aren't making sense. You don't know they're not making sense. But if you join in the pattern of the conversation and reflect back recognised words, often they do begin to talk sense. I love the challenge where I live. It's so rewarding. And even repetitive questions are a form of communication. What time is it? It just means, I don't know what I should be doing. Childhood experiences, memories differ. So reactions to what we do not understand, can't cope with, also differ. So being overwhelmed by numbers, noise, unfamiliarity, complexity, expectations, travel, illness, hospitals, can cause meltdown. When we tend to revert to our personal childhood patterns of behaviour. You know Jesus had a meltdown. I only found out a while ago. Well, I've read it before. John's Gospel tells of the death of Lazarus. When Jesus eventually arrived, he was met by Mary, weeping. He cared about that family, and she blamed him. It says, Jesus was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Word meaning agitated, confused, fearful, falling apart, heading for meltdown. And then it says, Jesus wept. Well, that's what I do when I have a meltdown. I cry. I didn't throw tantrums as a child. And church is a place where it's likely to happen. It's a challenge for churches to adapt to the 21st century and yet remain a place where those of us with dementia still feel comfortable. My church graciously does its best to enable me. It provides a quiet area of the building, warns me of any major changes to a service, details of who's who, because I don't recognise people, and I can get agitated if I think there are a lot of people up front that I don't know, and making sure someone's always with me, not assuming that everything's always okay, even if we might look it. See, Jesus certainly knew about vulnerability and dependency. I once ran a very large medical practice of over 14,000 patients I was in charge. So becoming dependent is difficult. But how was it for Jesus when he could no longer actively do God's will, when he was turned over to the religious leaders before his death? Many of us have turned over to disability or dementia. And we can feel deserted. When things don't make sense or disturb us, we can be put together again. Don't ask what the problem is, or overwhelm us with instructions. Settle us into a safe, familiar pattern to enable us to feel in control. For me, make a cup of tea. And because feelings remain and facts forgotten, it is always worthwhile visiting or taking someone out with dementia, even if they can't remember who, with, or where they went, because they'll remember whether they enjoyed it. And bright colours always cheer. Scripture Union do brilliant books with CDs of familiar choruses and hymns, because it was a social norm in our childhood to go to Sunday school. People often forget basic Christian truths. So reassure them. Tell them of God's unconditional love. Don't assume they've lost their faith. One man, he rings my bell, I live in a dementia-friendly village now, and he asked me, what am I meant to remember about Jesus? So I say, he loves you, he's forgiven you, he's going to prepare a place for you, and he'll welcome you when you get there. And his face lights up, and he says, yes, and he goes off to tell someone else. Some people seem to think the person is no longer there, but we are. Even if trapped inside, we can be found, because I live among such people I know. And Jesus came to seek those who are lost. Our future isn't limited, it's different. God is never limited. And each day I say to God, this is the day you've made, I will rejoice in it, and my purpose is to please God. And I have nothing to fear. His unending love and care can even ooze out of my cracks as I seek to reassure, affirm, and constantly find those who only appear mute and lifeless, but they're still alive inside. And there's my website where you can find out lots more resources free to download.
I need lots of space for my notes, because having to speak for such a short time is a severe restraint. It's a discipline. So if I speak too fast, just put your hand up. I want to, first of all, look at really the reason that we're here, all of us. 17 years ago, a lady called Christine Bryden was diagnosed with dementia. You may have read her books. She was a high-flying executive with the Australian government. I met her recently when she came through Wales as part of a speaking tour. She was with her husband, who was hugely supportive. Something she said at conference, I picked out and I put in the form of a prose poem, and it's being used in care homes and in different places because it's the reason you are sitting here listening to this about dementia now, and it's the reason I'm here. It's the very heart of it. Christine said, as I lose an identity in the world around me, which is so anxious to define me by what I do and say, rather than who I am, I can seek an identity by simply being me, a person created in the image of God. My spiritual life is reflected in the divine and given meaning as a transcendental being. As I travel toward the dissolution of myself, my personality, my very essence, my relationship with God needs increasing support from you, my other in the body of Christ. Don't abandon me at any stage, for the Holy Spirit connects us. I need you to minister to me, to sing with me, pray with me, to be my memory for me. You play a vital role in relating to the soul within me, connecting at this eternal level. Sing alongside me, touch me, pray with me and reassure me of your presence, and through you, of Christ's presence. I work for a charity that has over 208 years, recently celebrated our 208th Thanksgiving service. Our mission is to care for older people and also to be a voice for older people. So if I go quickly to my slides now, so I don't go off into some other story, as I am probably wont to do. Because this is a panel and you have an opportunity afterwards to ask questions specifically of all of us, I'd like you to know where I'm coming from and what's in my basket, so you know what questions I can answer and what questions I can't answer. What I really want for every one of you today is to go home with something that benefits your lives, something that you can apply practically, or something that will lift your spirit. So, where are we with the slides? Yes. So what's in my basket? I'm a cognitive behavioural therapist with a master's that looked at the effects of caregiving on families looking after someone with dementia. I've written books on dementia. They're out there, and it's nice to know that Dr. Boot recommends one very highly in a really good film on her website. We've also produced an information pack with separate leaflets because people told us when dementia comes into their lives, they don't have time to read a book. And to my amazement, some people don't read books anyway. I think they all need counselling, but they don't read books. So each insert in the pack is on a different topic. So there's challenging behaviour, there's looking out for the caregiver because caregivers can suffer desperately. It's making the home safe. There's everything in that pack. We run seminars, training, workshops, and conferences, and I'm actually communications manager with Pilgrim's Friend, and I'm very happy with what I do. It's a great blessing, actually, to talk to older people, to get their stories. Each one is packed full of stories. And I have today, and I'm going to be very quick with this, the story of truly dementia-friendly church. One of my colleagues was a home manager with us for many years, and she retired to help her husband, David, who was in leadership in his church in Suffolk. They have worked with their church, and I'm going to throw in a minute the bullet points that actually have to be done before any church can really become truly dementia friendly. They have a number of people who go every Sunday. They have weekday services for them as well. They have pastoral care. They have support for carers and support for individuals, and it works. We'll shortly be producing a booklet on this, and it'll be available for sale, hopefully, by the end of September. So how did they do it, and what do they need? First of all, there's an educative process with your church before everyone will accept people with dementia. Because if you think about it, we're very fixed and rigid in our churches. Very often, you'll get people who don't even like children making a sound or running around. It always reminds me when you take a plane journey and all the kids are up front, and you see all the men travelling by themselves doing their best to get towards the back. And I always say, I like being up front anyway, so I always say to somebody, put me up there with the children, because I love children's noises. But there is a tradition, an understanding in our country that church services have to be just so. They have to be right, and you don't have to interrupt them. So you have to explain what's happening. When somebody with dementia shouts out, what's he going on about? Or, as happened in this church, a dear little lady got up, walked up to the visiting speaker, stood straight in front of him, looked him up and down, and scrutinised him intensely, much to his intense discomfort. Once people know what's going on, they're happy with it. The other thing is that the pastors have to be really, the leadership team has to be really for it. I asked Rosie, how did you get this flying through your puzzle team? Because, you know, you can have a noisy church when you have people with dementia in it. You can have them making noises. You can have them bursting into racking sobs. You can have them doing things that you don't expect. And Rosie said, well, our pastor has 6 children and they're all noisy anyway. So in a way, there was this pre-preparation that they were all for it. They appointed team leaders. You have to have project managers for this project who can do a continual feedback. It's not something that can run in isolation itself. You put together a team and you list the giftings and their availability for pastoral care. And that's a whole other issue which I haven't got time for. They looked around their church building and they made some changes. People with dementia sit at the back. It's well lit. The lavatories are, the walls are dark, so the white of the lavatory stands out. The tea-making facilities are within easy reach. If somebody with dementia gets restless, they can get up and go out. And this is the key. They have a buddy. Each person within their church has a buddy alongside each one. And they know the person. And as Jennifer said, if there's anything different that's happening, going to happen today, that person is told. Finally, you prepare your visiting speakers so that they know as well. You have regular team meetings and you pray. And you have separate groups for caregivers and their care recipients. They found that works far better. And how much time have I got now?
1 minute.
I've got 1 minute. Okay, 1 minute. This is all very kind of mechanical, but the real issue is, first of all, wanting, and that's why I read Christine's point to you, seeing the benefit of what you're doing. Our homes have teams of supporters who come in and visit our residents. We noticed that in homes that have high numbers of people with dementia, supporters were beginning to drop away. So we're running a training program for supporters of simply how to be with people with dementia, how to minister with them, how to just sit with them. Because when you go and visit a resident without dementia, you get very good feedback. You have a friendly chat. You know that person is glad that you came, and you go away with a warm glow that you did something good. It's not like that with dementia unless you understand what's going on with a person with dementia. So we also teach something called soul talk. How to communicate, how to listen, how to really understand what's going on. And I think for the first time ever, I'm probably on time for this. And I want to say thank you to David for rescuing me with that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Trevor Adams. my name is Trev Adams. I was going to show you a video, but unfortunately we can't set it up. So this is an impromptu, note that, impromptu talk about what I'm doing with livability. I've worked in dementia care for the last 35 years. I'm a nurse, and I did 10 years practice, and then I worked at the University of Surrey, where I was a lecturer in mental health. And I specialised in dementia. And I did a master's degree, and I did a doctorate about 10 years ago on people with dementia in the community. And this was totally secular. This was in the Department of Sociology, and it's totally secular. Then, about 3 years ago, I decided to leave my job and think about dementia-friendly churches. And I met up with Livability. Livability is a really great organisation that historically has focused on people with disabilities. And so I met up with Adam Bonner, the director of the department, the Community Engagement Department, and I said to him, have you ever thought that people with dementia have a disability? Because when you can't remember, it disables you. You can't really function very much in life. And Adam said, let's think about it. And over a period of a few months, about 2 years, 18 months ago, Livability started to think about dementia as a disability and how we could work together to help churches support people with dementia. And so we came with this idea about what a dementia-friendly church is about. And the way we see it is that a dementia-friendly church is first of all inclusive to people with dementia. It includes people with dementia. Secondly, its services, I don't mean just sort of hymn singing, but its services, what it offers, is accessible to people with dementia. And lastly, dementia-friendly churches supports their local community in becoming dementia-friendly communities. So three things: inclusivity, accessibility, and also promoting dementia-friendly communities. And this is really great because it really fits in with the way social policy, government policy is going. Because David Cameron talks about the Dementia Challenge, and a key part of that is about making, creating dementia-friendly communities. And as a Christian, I see churches as being important. I see churches as having something really great to offer local communities, and they should be doing. And so this idea of dementia-friendly churches fits in very neatly with the idea of dementia-friendly communities. And so in my work with Livability, we got onto a really great idea there of linking dementia-friendly churches with dementia-friendly communities. And over the last 18 months, we've got involved in quite a lot of different projects. We go to churches and talk about what a dementia-friendly church is like, what they need to do. Last year we produced 10 tops, I can hardly say it, 10 top tips for churches seeking to become dementia friendly, and they're on our website. We've got 40 more. We've got 10 top tips, I'm going to get tongue tied, 10 top tips for churches seeking to be dementia friendly and changing their architecture, the internal architecture, making it accessible. About prayer, about how to communicate to people with dementia, and how to engage with local communities that want to become dementia-friendly. So we've got this practical support for churches in our top tips, about 50 now, I think, on how churches can become dementia-friendly. But our work has not just been in a very practical way, important though it is, we've also been working nationally with the Alzheimer's Society and their dementia-friendly community project. I've been on a subcommittee There's the Dementia Challenge Committee. I'm on a subcommittee looking at churches and other faith groups and women's institutes, other voluntary organisations, and how they can promote dementia-friendly churches. So I've been working at a national level. More recently, I've been working on behalf of Livability with the Dementia Action Alliance. And at this very moment, I am writing a letter on behalf of the Dementia Action Alliance and Livability, because we want to do this together, to senior clergy. What we want to do is get as many Church of England bishops as possible to become dementia friends. A lot of parishes, like around here, are looking at dementia-friendly churches, but we want a top-down approach. We want leaders of the church to really make churches friendly, sorry, a downwards approach. We don't want just Anglicans, members of the Church of England. We want Baptists, we want Methodists, we want Roman Catholics, we want all sorts. But also, I've got a particular heart. I went to a Hillsong Christmas carol service a year last Christmas, and this was at Wembley Arena, and there was about 15,000 people there, all really full of heart for Jesus. And my vision was that there's a great resource out there in churches like Hillsong, New Frontiers, New Wine, and they too need to think about people with dementia and how they can become more dementia friendly. I've got 1 minute. So, the last thing we're doing is we're writing with the Alzheimer's Society a church pack. Right? And this is for church leaders who are giving sermons. And we're writing this at the moment, and we're putting in our 10 top tips, we're putting in a sermon outline, and lots of different information that will help church leaders talk about dementia to their congregations. And lastly, we'll be at Greenbelt. Yeah? We're one of the, I think it's sponsors or whatever of Greenbelt. And we're working with Greenbelt, and what we're going to try and do is get as many people at Greenbelt to become a dementia friend. And we're going to make a great campaign about this, a great fuss about this, because we want Christians to be dementia friends, but also we want them to be part of dementia-friendly churches. Thank you.
In 20 seconds over, you're fired. Thank you very much indeed, that was great. These are fascinating and important perspectives, and lots of different stories and ways of looking at dementia. I'm very grateful to each one for sharing so openly. Now, we have 15 minutes for questions, so really, the floor is open. If you have any questions or any challenges or any issues that you think the panel can help with, this is your moment.
My first question, I'm part of a smaller church, and when I look at having to cope for yet another issue, which probably is quite important to me for personal reasons, I just look and think, can a small church cope with all the things we've got to do on top of all the other things we're trying to do for Christ at present? Any thoughts on that?
I'll be responding to that very, very good question. And small or large, I've sensed that's an issue all the time when we do these things. Folks say, look, we've got this ministry and that ministry, we're doing this, that and the other. Can I suggest, though, we take this a different way around? Actually, most of what we're talking about today is the way we think about people with disabilities, with chronic illness, the way we think, which I hope is informed ultimately by our theology, but the way we think informs the way we act. If what we did to you today is send you away with a checklist for wheelchair users, a checklist for people with dementia, a checklist for people who are blind, for deaf, autism, so on and so on, then we'd have missed the point. and what we could do with, I mean, I'm not, please don't, you know, I'm not saying anything against checklists and such, but that's not the point. The point is how we think about things, therefore how we respond to situations, how we adapt to, and actually at the end of the day, it's about everybody and everybody feeling part of that church.
All I was going to say is that we speak at a number of churches. I'm speaking not this Saturday, but the following Saturday and the following Saturday. And so we have experience, my colleagues and I, of a whole range of churches. And actually, the smaller churches cope better. It's as though they're more together, they see each other and they speak more often.
Well, I go to a large church, and it's so large, they're not interested in dementia. It's quite a fashionable, middle-class, posh church, and they're not interested in people with dementia. I send emails to my the vicar of the church, and I don't even get a reply. What do I do? I do on Sunday mornings, and I'm meeting the pastor there tomorrow morning.
My new vicar didn't know that he didn't know, so I invited him for a meal. He's brilliant now.
It was just, you mentioned your website.
Yeah.
Can you say the website again?
Yes, I will.
Please.
Okay. The website is Livability. So if you go to the Livability website, and you'll find detail, or just put it in Google, and if you just navigate it and come to the Dementia Friendly Church part, you'll find all our stuff. Right? Send us an email, ask us what you want, and we'll get back to you pretty smartly. But also, I've got these cards, there's some here, and also on the Livability stand, that about dementia-friendly churches. Just ask me for one, and I'll give you one. Always feel free to email either Livability or me, and that'd be great. Okay.
I'd like to ask, I'm in a little group at our church, which isn't a big church, and as far as I know, at the moment in the congregation, we haven't really got anybody with dementia. But we have got people that aren't able to come to church anymore because of dementia, which involves me. And I'd like to know how I can take the church to them when I'm visiting them. We go and take communion to them, and they understand that they enjoy that part. But for me as a person, a personal friend going, I also am with my friend here, we are the pastoral care team as well, a part of there's another two of us. But when we go into people's homes, there might be a person with dementia, because I've had no real experience of anything, I do find I get a bit apprehensive how to be with them.
I'm sure we've all got different thoughts about that. And I think hearing Jennifer, and if you watched her film on the website, it would be so helpful to you. But one of the things that we're teaching supporters now is soul talk. It's looking for the emotion beyond the words. It's learning how to be with a person with dementia by just being, by just sitting. There's an excellent book called Contented Dementia by clinical psychologist Oliver James. We thoroughly recommend that. You can get it on Amazon, they're much cheaper now. Also, in my first book, I think it was, there's a chapter on soul talk. Because, as we heard earlier, emotions are heightened. What's important is to feel what the person is feeling. It's to leave them feeling better. But always we go with spiritual support, because usually we're visiting Christians. And one of my most favourite pictures in the world is of a church visitor who hadn't even bothered to take her winter hat off. And she was just supporting the hand of a lady who was clearly in advanced dementia. And I was walking out, and I just saw this out of the corner of my eye. And the lady with dementia, her face was absolutely aglow and alive. So I stopped and went in. And all the visitor was doing was saying to her, looking straight into her eyes, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. She was resonating with that lady's core beliefs, with that lady's spiritual person at the essence of her. And that's what it is. If you can get one of my books, but email me or speak to my colleague Janet, former psychogeriatric nurse, home manager, and we'll give you more detail on that.
We've talked mainly about what happens in churches and perhaps in homes. A lot of our relatives and friends and neighbours will be in nursing homes, residential homes, which aren't always the nicest of places for people to be in. I wonder what we can do to improve that.
Just hand me that, Peter. Here is an invitation, Simon. Come and visit any of our care homes and just stay for an hour and see how a care home should be run. I've just written an article which is going out in several of the press because people are afraid of the stories of the bad care, of the abuse even, and the neglect of vulnerable people in care homes. And I can understand that. I would feel like that myself. But the CQC apart, the attitude in the care home, the ethos is dictated by the leadership, by the management, and it comes cascading down. We have training programs that train carers how to watch for abuse or neglect in other carers. But it's essentially the heart attitude of the management team itself. If you remember, in a lot of these cases that you reported, the management had been distanced. They said, oh, we didn't know any of that was going on. Why not? They should be out there on the floor. Yeah.
How we do it in Somerset, where I live, the Alzheimer's Society facilitate it. They go, they know all the care homes, and they go and chat up the people, and they get beans to talk to them. And then they take on the training videos, and they go in and do training. So get onto your local Alzheimer's Society and say, what can they do? Because they have the power and authority to get into these places.
I wasn't actually necessarily thinking of actual abuse. I was actually thinking of the lack of quality of life. People just sitting around a room with the television put actually on.
Oh, that's...
And no one ever talking to them.
Yeah,
it's all part of the training. In fact, I interviewed a lady in one of our care homes. She's been there 12 years now. And she said to me, when I first came in, this was a lovely, quiet place. Now she said there's something happening every day. And it's happening all day. And she didn't like it. One of the challenges with older people is they can become desperately passive and not want to bother anymore. And we feel like that ourselves when we're tired, don't we? You know, my stairs haven't been dusted for 3 weeks now. But it's stimulating them, especially people with dementia. It is taking in a whole range of activities in our care homes. But on the other hand, I just want to mention something that my colleague Janet said in answer to that. These are older people. They're frail people. They have low energy levels. Many of them actually don't want to be made to be jollied up. If you think about it, if we came into your homes on a Friday, Sunday afternoon after lunch, how many of you would want to be jollied up? You just want to be left. I agree with you, warehousing is atrocious and it's a very bad thing. It doesn't happen in the good homes. Most of the good homes are run by people who actually care, like we do, about older people.
Okay, we'll take one more question.
Sorry, this wasn't really a question, but going back to earlier, We have a couple of ladies in our church with dementia, one diagnosed, one won't be diagnosed. And we have a team of people going into the lady with dementia every day to do her tablets. And the really useful thing is on our website, I have a link to Jennifer's website. And recently people have gone back just to look through it, just to familiarise themselves with things about dementia that they don't understand. So I just do recommend putting a link on your church website to Jennifer's website.
There are other good websites as well, I mean, not just the mobility one. There's the Alzheimer's Society website. There's a real lots of information on there, lots of key information sheets, and I would recommend that to be on church websites as well. Really great information.
Well, I think we're going to have to stop there because I know we're running late and right by one time. So thank you very much, panel, for such stimulating presentations, and thank you for some great questions, and I'm sorry they can't all be answered, but we can talk about that over lunchtime.